These are the people, the movers and the shakers, the businesses, the people you know in your community who make Pittsburgh work. This is Pittsburgh Works on the Voice of Pittsburgh, News Radio 1020, KDKA.
It's going to be a very interesting hour. We're going to basically be talking a lot about hoarding, part one of an interesting show, because October is National Hoarding Month, and yes, tomorrow will be October 1. And before shows like A&E's Hoarders and TLC's Hoarding Buried Alive, hoarding was a relatively unknown mental illness. Reality TV shows really have shown the worst of the worst as far as hoarding, with garbage piling up to the ceiling, unsanitary conditions, and homes about ready to crumble beneath the weight of the contents inside. The hoards have been growing for decades. You know, hoarding is now recognized by the medical community as a psychological disorder, and it appears to be more prevalent in the first world nations as compared to the more impoverished areas of the globe. Well, it's only recently been defined and studied as an illness. Mostly in the last 20 years, it has been recognized as a problem for nearly a millennium. In the Middle Ages, Europe hoarders were known as misers. Dante's Inferno, the hoarder occupied the fourth ring of hell, existing in a constant struggling against, those who could not hold anything, whether a mental disorder, spiritual problem, or both. Hoarding tends to result in people who are drawn and isolated from society. Now, today, John Samick from Service Master Greater Pittsburgh and Johnny Samick are back, both from South Texas, aiding in the cleanup of the aftermath of Hurricane Harvey. They're going to be talking about that and the extreme cleanup processes involved with the hoarding dilemma. And again, October is designated as Hoarding Awareness Month, so it will be a very timely discussion. So we're going to begin talking about Texas, where Johnny Samick was, and what people are dealing with down there. And I got to believe just about everything. John, good to have you back here in KDKA this morning. Welcome back.
Oh, great to be back. The old Pittsburgh. Yep. Down in Texas, those floods you saw on TV, they really did devastate people's homes and their businesses. And we went down there to help get people's homes really pretty much the flood water out, get their content out, get them dried, and at least get them to the point where they weren't going to have mold and they could start to think about how to rebuild. And they're going to be rebuilding down there for years. But they're resilient people, so I think the people of Texas, they're gonna bounce back in a big way down there.
So, John, explain to me why you guys went, and how does that really happen? Is that a volunteer thing, or do they actually seek you out, or a little bit of both? Good morning.
Well, our people, our employees, they volunteer to go. But obviously, we're paying them to go. Nobody really goes for that kind of a period of time. But our expertise is in cleaning, drying, sanitizing homes, and that's really what the businesses and the homes needed down there. Many of the homes are covered by the National Flood Insurance Plan, which we've talked about many times here on the show. It's a big city. I mean, it's the fourth largest city in the country. They have a lot of flood policies in place. A lot of them don't. So they're going to have problems down there because they're just not covered. But the thing we needed to do was to aid them to at least stop the problem. And so that's why we were there.
All right, we're going to get to this hoarding epidemic in just a moment. What do you think it really was that made people finally realize there was something clinically wrong with someone, to where the American Medical Association has got in, they've diagnosed it, people are actually being medicated for it? What do you think it really took to make this thing become a clinical disease, psychological disease, John?
Well, I think that the TV has had a big play in that. It started off, you would see on the news, you'd see homes or news or stories where a house was being condemned, or there was some public outcry because there was so much debris and content, whatever, just pouring out of the house. I mean, the more spectacular ones are where you had a house that was overrun by cats. So as the people became more aware of it, just like so many other maladies, autism as an example, as people became more aware of it, it showed up that it was more present than we ever realized. People maybe at one time thought, you know, those are just crazy people who are bad housekeepers, but that's not the case.
And it really is difficult, especially when you have to go in. Someone who is related to the family, Johnny, who hasn't been there in a while, and someone has passed, and they've got to make the decision to sell the house, and they're thinking, okay, we're going to show up, and we'll bring a bucket of soap and water, and we'll get it done, and then they're facing that dilemma. So this is something you specialize in, and this is something that's not for the faint of heart. It's heavy lifting, isn't it?
It's definitely heavy lifting. There's There's things that you find in hoarding situations that you would never think to find. You know, and sometimes you think, how could people live like this? But you have to take a step back. And a lot of what you do as a restorer of a property that's hoarded is psychological. It's reassuring the person that, hey, things are going to be okay. There's a solution to this. And you kind of have to help the family, too. I mean, a lot of times you have to get some third parties involved to try to help the healing between the family and the person who actually has the hoard.
We have a lot more to get to when we come back. But, you know, one of the things I was just thinking about, guys, you just can't take this stuff and dump it anywhere. You know, I mean, you got to have a place to take some of this stuff. And some of this stuff actually could be hazardous material, too. So there's a lot of work that goes into this. So we're definitely going to talk about it when we come back. Service Master Greater Pittsburgh talking about hoarding. October is National Hoarders Month. And yes, it is tomorrow, October 1. Stay with us.
These are the people who make Pittsburgh work. This is Pittsburgh Works on the Voice of Pittsburgh, KDKA.
All right, we're back. We're talking hoarding, and hoarding month of October begins tomorrow. And it is a clinical issue. It is a serious issue, and a lot of people are dealing with it. And that's why we have the experts here. So what is considered, John, before we kind of get back to the A's and B's of this whole program today and some of the great questions you put together, what is actually considered hoarding? How much is too much?
Oh, I got a good example.
Okay.
Is that, you know, we have collections, and I know that you were a collector of trains.
Right.
And you know, maybe somebody would have looked into your basement and they would have said, wow, you got too many trains in that basement.
Oh, yeah, they did.
Okay? And the difference between collecting and hoarding, okay, collecting is something you do with your family. Hoarding is when your collection becomes your family. Oh. Hoarder feels that those items that they're collecting are never going to hurt them or never going to leave them. Okay, so somebody can be a collector of books, to have a library full of, or a house full of books, and as long as it's kept in proper perspective, that's okay. But when it becomes a compulsive disorder, that's when the hoarding type of thing takes over, and it becomes really out of control. People who are hoarders.
What's the worst, and without obviously giving too many examples to where people could actually know who you're talking about, because we would never want to disrespect anyone, what's some of the worst things that you've dealt with, Johnny, when it comes to hoarding?
You know, some of the worst things are when people, they've gotten their houses to the point where they can't use their bathrooms anymore. So the toilets or the bathtubs, they don't work. And people are proud. They don't want to ask for help sometimes. So they might go to some place local where they can find a shower or use the bathroom, or they start using buckets and 1 gallon milk cartons to use the bathroom instead of going to the bathroom. And when you come into those situations, not only are you dealing with odors and really unsanitary conditions, but flies and bugs and things like that. So when you get into the situations like that, you know, there's health risks. And those are the big things. I mean, if you go into someone's place who is an overboard collector, you can deal with that a little bit easier. But when it's gotten past the point of just collecting and hoarding, it's gotten into some health issues. Those are the hard ones.
So is this what we see on the evening news, some of the things he was talking about, those horrible conditions? Is that the same as hoarding, John?
It is typically, if you would look into the situation beyond the sensational part of the boxes falling out or cats crawling everywhere, it is most likely a hoarding situation.
All right, why do, you know, we talked a little bit about why people hoard, but what's the main reason? Is there laziness involved, bad housekeeping, or do you think there's a little bit more to it than that? And obviously, there are some physicians out there that would tell you there is.
Well, hoarding is a mental disorder, and it's marked by an obsessive desire to acquire a significant amount of possessions. But the important thing is what is that? Is it it's not, you know, a miserly type of an attitude. It's usually triggered by a traumatic life event, such as grief or divorce or abuse or some sort of lack of control. So it's important to understand that it's way more than just being a messy or lazy person who needs cleanup. It's a psychological disorder that the hoarder is dealing with. And it's a compulsion, not an addiction.
And you think a lot of these people really were pretty much so-called, I hate to use the word, but it's the only way to describe it, normal, and then just something triggered it, do you think? Or do you think it was there all along? How does it really start, do you think, Johnny?
Yeah, and there's usually, if you're in a hoarding situation and through experience, you can kind of find out maybe what that was. You know, sometimes they'll let you know, but if you look on a wall, you might see one wall that has not been touched as far as, you know, it's not piled up. The thing, you can see pictures on a wall. And there's a time where maybe those people are, they still have mullets in the picture. You know, you time it based on, hey, that all those pictures on those walls are still from the 80s, and that wall was perfectly pristine. And you can kind of start gauging when something might have happened to that person. We had a situation where a gentleman, his mother had passed away in the house, and he was living by himself. The whole entire house was probably about 2.5 feet deep of just garbage. He wouldn't throw anything away, except for his mother's room. His mother's room was completely untouched, and he had built a wall of garbage in front of her door to the point where anything that had her picture or had her remembrance on it was completely clean, the only clean things in the house. And we pretty much could figure out, hey, when she passed away, he that's when this house turned the other direction. So there's things like that. That's just an example. But yeah, usually it's something where people just have a tough time dealing with an emotional breakdown and collecting things or not throwing things away. That's how they fill that need in their life.
Is it kind of like an extension of going to an extreme when it comes to sentimental value? Because I know a lot of times I don't like a lot of stuff in my house, period, okay? And the trains were neat and orderly, and they weren't as though they were just piled in the corner, okay? But you realize in the end, you don't love anything as that much if it can't love you back, okay? So I think it's good for people to set a timeline on how long they have certain things, and then maybe set a few dates throughout the year, like spring cleaning, to get rid of stuff. Because even if you don't intentionally do it, sentimental value, you can end up becoming a hoarder and not even realizing it. And before you know it, why does it happen to how many people when their parents die in their 70s and 80s, the kids show up and they're like, what are we going to do with all this stuff? I think there comes a time in your life where you got to let go.
Well, you know, we do have a lot of, you mentioned the parents dying. I mean, we were probably at the last of the Great Depression area kids who are passing away, and those people experience extreme lack. So as they're passing away, those people have acquired years of memories. Then we have the greatest generation, and they're downsizing. Baby boomers are downsizing for the first time. But the real thing is future hoarders. The people are having children now. They're not teaching their kids no. There's a lot of compulsive buying and buying of stuff and material things. You know, depression, the issue of depression is cured with retail therapy in all age groups.
Yeah, so we call them the QVC hoarders. They're looking for the deal. Like, you know, to fill their need, they want to find something that they think, I got a good deal on that. And we'll go into houses where they're piled up high as can be with boxes that aren't even opened of brand new items. And it's organized hoard, but you walk in and there's a little, we'll call it a goat path, through the living room and dining room into the kitchen where there's unopened boxes stacked to the ceiling. And just because they got a good deal and that they made them feel good for that few minutes when they bought it.
You know, and I think it's up to us to teach parents that, look, we don't need as much as you think we need, because if they can't give them the affection physically by making them a dinner or going or driving over or hugging, they feel as though I'll buy them something. And that really, in some cases, would be better having that money in the bank for the future generation as opposed to something that they're going to use maybe for a year and toss it out, or it's not going to be used at all.
Without a doubt. Not a doubt.
You know, this is kind of a scary topic because even though you might not want to admit it, all of us have a little bit of this in us. Is that a fair statement, you think?
I would definitely say that. I mean, I am an information hoarder, which is one of the 9 or 10 different types of things. I mean, I admit I'm an information hoarder. I get trade magazines and interesting magazines that are related to business, and I hold on to them for some. I know I could go online and get that information, but there's something about
wanting to have
the information. So if you go into my office, I have a lot of magazines, and I think I call myself an information hoarder.
Teachers actually do that quite often, especially a little bit older teachers, because everything that they had was paper on a paper version. So as they would not get rid of newspapers or articles or old books, and you go into their house and there's just piles upon piles of books and papers and just information that they just can't get rid of. You know, now the millennials nowadays, they don't even know what a magazine is. So I mean, everything's digital, so that you don't see many younger kids, younger generation doing that. But it's definitely something that's interesting when you see it.
Well, you know, a lot of folks do it on their smartphones too. They don't delete information. The next thing you know, they got an issue because they haven't kind of cleaned it or wiped it clean. So we're hoarding even with technology today, right?
We hadn't thought about that one, but I guess that is a possibility for sure.
Yeah. I'm telling you, folks, we have definitely opened up a can of worms here. A lot of folks are probably saying for the first time, you know what, maybe I'm in that category. We come back, we're going to talk about ways to help you, what they can do to restore you, to get you back on the right track, and more importantly, some of the signs that you need to look for, because a lot of folks are dealing with this right in front of their very eyes, and
these
that's what
the
they
people
do
who make Pittsburgh work.
This is
Pittsburgh Works on the Voice of Pittsburgh, KDK.
All right, I want to talk a little bit about this hoarding situation, and more importantly, how we want everyone to understand. If you're dealing with this by a family member, or you are realizing that maybe you have an issue, no one is casting stones or saying anything negative, just saying, look, we understand, we've been there, we've all got a little bit in us, and that's one of the reasons I said that to John and Johnny earlier. So we want people to know that we're here to help, correct, John?
Well, that's true. That's very true. I mean, it's way more than just cleaning. It's way more than just rolling up to a home with a dumpster and start to throw things out. That would be easy. If that's all we ever had to do, that would be the easy part. The problem is that you have to deal with all the dynamics and the psychological things, not only from the person who physically owns the property and owns the stuff, but there's so many dynamics with the families and everything that go on. It's a process, and there are people that are experts at it. We have in our company, we do have an expert who does this, but it's a challenge.
And this is one of the reasons, Johnny, you need to have an expert team like ServiceMaster. This is my opinion, because as much as we trivialize this by saying, look, this stuff needs to go, some of this stuff could actually be valuable that could be passed on or cashed in, or somehow a next generation or two could actually benefit from it. So you have to have someone that you can trust there with you. And also you have to take your time and sort through this. Not the average person wants to do that, because there's a lot of muck and grime. So you want to do the right thing. And if there is something that could go to somebody worth value, you want to make sure that it goes to the right people.
Oh yeah. And when we do these cleanups, we have to build a relationship with the client first.
Yeah.
And when you build that relationship, you kind of find out what's valuable to them. There's definitely ways to do that. But a lot of times it's sorting. And when you sort, you have to put the things aside that are garbage. And sometimes the hoarders, they don't want to let the garbage go.
Is it that bad? God bless them.
Cool garbage. So we make we make certain piles. And we tell them, all right, here's some stuff. You don't want to get rid of this yet. Well, let's put it over here to think about. And then, okay, as we're going through items, okay, these things are actually pretty valuable. Let's put these over here, and I think these would be good for you to save. And then another pile might be, hey, you know what? Someone else might be able to use these. Why don't we donate this to the Goodwill or the Blessing Board, or somebody that can give it to someone else who might need it? And then by giving them an option to donate, it allows them to think that they're doing something good with what they have too. So a lot of people give up their stuff and their hoarding instincts when they know, you know what, I can help someone else with this stuff, whether it be clothes or furniture or who knows what. But
how difficult is that, getting caught in the middle of that? I mean, trying to, you know, come on now, it's okay. I mean, that's got to be rough.
It's what slows the process up incredibly, because you're gonna have donated items, you're gonna have items you're going to give away, you're going to have items that you're going to sell. I mean, there's value in a lot of stuff, especially unopened boxes or whatever. And then there's the final item is, what are we going to dispose of? And then what are you going to keep? Actually, the final thing you want to do is, what are you going to keep? Because you want to be that the last decision. But it's challenging. The people are emotionally attached to everything, so you have to kind of divide that up. You have to work through, you know, to try to get them to believe, and they want to separate it. And the other thing is their energy level and their willingness to do this is short. So it's not unusual that we would be on a job site maybe for 4 hours in a day because the people just get
fragile.
Too much. Yes, and so we have to stop the process and make arrangements to come back. So it's very difficult, very time consuming, and then when you bring other family members into the picture, it just becomes a real challenge.
Servicemaster of GreaterPGH.com. Of course, you can call them. They're out in Oakmont. If you need help, that's what they do. Do you guys have experts that you actually will take something to that you think maybe there's some value in there? And before you toss it, maybe your judgment or knowledge on that particular item may not be good enough that you could actually reach out to someone who could help you with that, John?
Yeah. Typically, we don't take it off the people's property. We'll hopefully clean out a section of the house where we can put things that are, we'll call them questionable. And then we get with the homeowner and say, hey, we're not sure if this record collection is worth anything, or hey, we're not sure if these pieces of furniture are antique or not, so that then we can reach out to specialists who might be able to come in and help them, give them a value, or hey, that is something that you should try to sell. You might be able to get some money for that, and you can use that towards fixing your bathroom or painting some rooms or just living. So yes, that's definitely something that we do. Another kind of fun thing, you had asked earlier. What do we do when we find valuables? We still come across people where they hide money in books and underneath mattresses. And when they're hoarders, they squirrel things away. I'm just going to use that term. So if we had a bookshelf and the hoarder said, I want to just get rid of all those books. Before we throw those books away, we have to take the book off the shelf, shake it, open it up, make sure there's no money in it. We've found probably thousands of dollars just in books. And we set it all aside, and man, that's a great moment when you can hand a baggie full of money to the homeowner and say, hey, did you remember you had this? Oh, no, I had no idea. And that could, change your direction in life there. Right?
And what's so sad too, there's got to be some embarrassment involved, especially if the kids are there for the first time in a while. And what they need to understand, you guys really are a part of the family because you're being trusted with family values and valuables that, really, nobody's judging anyone. I just want to keep referring to that because I know people right away. I got to believe some people are probably thinking, I can't call somebody to see this. We're going to think, how was I letting my parents live? I'm going to do this myself. So then they're doing themselves an injustice because it's got to be emotionally horrifying to go through that stuff and to realize this was your mom or dad or grandparent who you thought was okay while you were living on the other side of the country,
I went through this when my parents died. We had their house, and we went through all the things, and it's very difficult for family members to do that because they are emotionally attached to the memories that are in that house as well.
I agree.
So having somebody who's disconnected to that is beneficial, but you can't just have a service people or hire somebody just to trash out the house, because you have to have a team that understands what's going on and has the empathy to work through this process. Our people who are led by our team leaders, they're trained not to do that judgment thing, not to walk out and say these people are crazy or how could people live that way. That's not what we think. That's not what we think. I mean, we understand that it's a disorder. It's a situation that was probably triggered by something else, and we're there to help. And that's the difference between, I think, what we provide and what a company that just does, trash outs would do.
Do you think if we live long enough that we all kind of in a way become hoarders, do you think? To kind of just put some clarity to this a little bit.
Oh, we do acquire memories.
Well, I'll tell you, my house, I feel like I have a toy hoarding problem from my four kids, and every Christmas, my mother and my wife's mother, I've limited them to how many toys they can purchase for them. Doggone it, they're gonna meet that three toy minimum. You know what? And when you have four kids, and those toys pile up, and all of a sudden, You're overwhelmed with toys. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's. I realized this a couple weeks ago. I'm like, if someone walked into my house, they might go, I don't know about this guy. I think he might be a toy hoarder. Yeah. And so it's some level We all have too much stuff maybe in our lives. Whether that's the true hoarding or whether that's just, you know, your stuff caught up to you, you know. But if you have the realization that you have too much and you're able to then take care of it, you're not really a hoarder.
If you're judging someone, there's only one person that's supposed to judge anyone. We all knew who that, God Almighty himself. So no one has the right to really judge. It's all about helping your fellow man. 412-826-1010. As we go to break, this 24-hour emergency service number, I've never asked you. Is this literally like right now or tonight at 8 o'clock, anytime, if you need help, that's the number to dial?
Absolutely. Absolutely. We're available 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. And yes, that does mean holidays.
If I need a tow, will you come and get me? No, I'm just kidding.
We know who to send.
Okay, there you go. Let me take a short break. We'll come back. Love what these folks do. Best thing that you need to do, don't be ashamed. Pick up the phone if you're dealing with this serious issue. It's something you should realize you're not alone with. 412-826-1010. Stay with us.
These are the people who make Pittsburgh work. This is Pittsburgh Works on the Voice of Pittsburgh, KDKA.
All right, let's kind of finish on a couple of serious notes when it comes to this hoarding issue. National Hoarder Month, the month of October. This is our first of two shows on this. We have a special guest still to come later this month. Johnny Samick, his father John, is here. So you guys are the professionals, and you're not clinical psychologists or psychiatrists, but, okay, somebody's listening to this right now, and they're heading over to their family's house, and they know they're going to have to kind of find a way to step over all of this stuff. What's the best way for them to approach them by saying, look, I was listening to this radio show today. I think we have somebody who could actually help you with this without hurting their feelings. How do you do that? Because I wouldn't know what to do. You guys do it all the time. What's the best way to approach it just from a human standpoint, not a clinical standpoint, but a human standpoint?
I think that complete honesty with your family member, not harsh, not blaming, you know, not saying, yelling like you live in a pigsty or something like that, but really explaining to them that, hey, you know what, I'm really concerned, and I think that there's a way that we can bring someone in that can help you live a better lifestyle. Not throwing all your stuff away. You have to understand that you're not going to clean the house out completely the way that you would want it to be cleaned, but clean it enough that they can live safe and happy. No, so you have to have a realistic expectation when you're talking to your family members that it may not be what you want, but just make it be what they can be safe and happy in.
Do you recommend, John, getting people together for some sort of intervention if it comes to a mother or father?
Well, I think it's important that the family members who are like maybe not in the home do have a unified front, because as you see sometimes on those TV shows, and they certainly sensationalize those situations because that makes for good TV.
That's kind of sad in a way.
Well,
it is,
know,
what it is.
It sells commercials,
right?
You know, so, but to touch a little bit on what Johnny was saying there is that we want to know that no matter how sad it is or how frustrating it is, you need to always remember that really no one would choose to live this way. It just has happened. And if they could be out of it, they prefer that. Nobody wants to live that way. It's really a horrible life to live, whether it be because of safety, sanitation, you know, separation from family, you know, grandchildren don't come visit because they can't get in the door or whatever. Okay. But all throughout this process, you need to maintain the highest level of compassion for the situation. Now, firmness, gentle firmness, consistency. But I think, as Johnny said, you need to stress that you care about your relative, or you care about your friend to the point that you don't want them to be hurt, you don't want them to be ill, you don't want them to have a fire or have a medical emergency and the people can't get in to help them. And so that's how you need to play it. And if you can have a family that's unified in love and compassion with that, I think it can be worked.
You know, if you can maybe get a professional in there who could get it done a lot quicker, maybe explain, go on a vacation, come back, do whatever. Do you like these people standing over you when you're picking through this stuff?
Well, it definitely makes the process go slower.
Right.
After a while, maybe after the first day or two, the homeowner builds a trust with somebody. So someone in that crew, and it might not be me, it might not be Beth, who is our other hoarding expert. That person might pick another person on the team that they trust, and they just gravitate towards. And that person sort of is, for lack of better terms, the babysitter. And that person is going to work with that person while the other people can go through and get items out and sort items. And it's all about building the trust with that person. But yes, if there was a bunch of other family members hovering over looking at it, it's going to slow the process down tremendously. So we try to encourage, hey, you know what, if you want to stay outside as we bring things out, you can kind of make some determination, but let the actual homeowner, let the actual person whose stuff it is, make some of those decisions, because you have to make sure that they understand that they're still in control.
What about cats and pets? And God bless people who love cats. I had them growing up, I understand, and dogs, but sometimes, you know, everybody wants to just open their doors to those strays, and the next thing you know, there are a whole lot more felines and dogs running around than humans, and if somebody's not old enough to take care of them, that can cause a real problem.
Well, this is one of the most highly publicized types of hoarding. You see it on TV, it's sensational. Studies show that animal hoarding is more closely related to childhood experiences such as neglectful, abusive, or inconsistent parenting. So these things all lead to a negative self-image, depression, relationship issues later in life. When people feel this way, they sometimes remedy that with a pet. Pets offer unconditional love. For some, a pet is all a person needs to start feeling better. For others, it can be a getaway into animal hoarding. So a triggering event like a crisis or a trauma can shatter any self-confidence or mental stability that pet has given, and this leads to an addition of more pets as a filler for that emotional void, and soon, you know, two pets lead to seven and seven to 42.
Now, the question somebody's asking themselves right now, what are they going to charge me for this? And I don't want you to get into any kind of exact figures. More junk, more money. I mean, how do you appraise that square footage? What do you guys do?
It's actually, we do it on a time and material basis. So we let the family members know, or whoever would be paying, okay, here's our labor rates. Now, we're going to move as quickly as you want us to, or as slowly as you need us to. But yeah, and then at the end of each day, we tally up the labor and the supplies, maybe garbage bags or you know, safety equipment, and say, okay, here's the total. And each day we give them a total. So we give them a sort of a ballpark when we look at based on how many dumpsters or how many trips to the recycling, you know, facility we have to take. So we give them an idea of what they're looking at. But each day we kind of give them a running total, because, like we've said many times, it's all based on how fast or slow they want to go. So at the end of the day, we say, hey, you know what, ma'am, you spent $900 today. And look, because you couldn't make decisions on these things, we've barely gotten through half of a room. Or, you know, you could have, they may make fast decisions, and you spent, you know, $1,100 and you got the whole entire first floor done. It all depends on how quickly or how slowly the person can make decisions.
Let's end on this note. We'll come back to wrap it up. But I think something that you have to be thinking about, now that we've got it spick and span, and he's too young to know that term, but you and I, when someone said it was spick and span, it was like good to go. Bring the family over, okay? Let the kids out of the bedroom. Everything's safe. They can walk around, no shoes, whatever. But how do you prevent it from happening again? I mean, that's the thing. And that's the worst feeling, when you've seen it better and then it goes back again.
Well, it does happen. It does happen that people go backwards. But the best thing that can happen is you bring it. We do have a group of professionals that we refer them to, that they can go get into some
maintenance
therapy, consulting, that type of thing, because they do need to address the reason why it happened. That's really not our role. We recognize and we deal with it, but that's not our role to cure it.
We're going to come back, wrap it up. Great show, these two guys. Love what they do. Service Master, Greater Pittsburgh. Stay with us.